Rick Scott orders a study looking at Florida's troubled correction system. We'll take your calls in just a moment. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9, and now catch the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, too. And just ahead, we want your calls as we take a closer look at how Florida handles mental health issues and the troubled state prison system. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, PGA Tour leader Charlene Landon on women's leadership here on the First Coast. Plus, Serena Williams goes for a Grand Slam, Culpepper on her historic win at Wimbledon. All of that and more ahead. But first this morning, Florida Governor Rick Scott has ordered an independent analysis of the state's prison system and the development of two prisons to test new ways of handling and housing prisoners with mental health issues. Scott is also directing the Department of Corrections to work with the Departments of Children and Families and Juvenile Justice on how to improve mental health services. That's a change mental health advocates say is badly needed here in the Sunshine State. Florida's often criticized prison system is one of the nation's largest and houses about 100,000 inmates, but it's been under increased scrutiny after suspicious deaths and allegations of cover-ups. We begin the hour now with a closer look at the state of our mental health system in Florida and why challenges in the prison system are such a big piece of the puzzle. Denise Marzullo is president and CEO of Mental Health America of Northeast Florida and joins us now in studio. Hi, Denise.
Good morning.
And we're already getting your calls. We want to know what you think about the governor's order of an audit of the state's prison system and how this has to do with housing and treating the mentally ill in the system. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show or weigh in on Facebook. So, Denise, a spokesman for the Department of Corrections says this audit should be done sometime in the fall, calling for increased oversight and accountability for the department and working with mental health agencies as well. What's your initial reaction?
My initial reaction is it's long overdue. Definitely could and should have been done years ago. I'm happy that they're looking into it. I just hope that they don't just do a study, listen to a lot of people, and then put that study on a shelf somewhere, that there really is action.
And what action, in your view, is needed?
So we really have to look at what is, first of all, what the treatment is like for mentally ill in our jails. I've toured the mental health floor down in Miami-Dade, and terrible, terrible things happening with the mentally ill there. And I've toured our jail, the mental health units on our jail in Duval County, and they're actually really good. Really good treatment happening here. And so kind of I'm hoping that they take some of the best practices that are working in certain parts of the state or other states and bring them to other prisons.
And it's 549-2937 to join the show this morning. It's good to hear that the Duval County Jail is doing a good job of dealing with mentally ill prisoners. That said, you've long raised the concern, and have many others, that the largest mental health facility in this area is the jail. So the governor calling for these reforms is an acknowledgement, isn't it, that our jail and prison system is our mental health system in many respects?
It is, and that's because of closing the state hospitals. We've talked about that before, that in the 60s and 70s, when they closed all the state hospitals, the money that was supposed to go to community-based care kind of slowly went away, and they cut it and cut it. And so, unfortunately, if people aren't getting treatment for their symptoms of mental illness, that often leads to arrests and jail and prison. And so the jails and prisons, if you ask them, Sheriff Rutherford was the best spokesman in that he would say, the jails aren't designed as mental health treatment centers. That's not what they're for. That's not what they're supposed to be for. But that's what they've become. And so because that's what they've become, I think now people are starting to realize we've got to do something better than what we're doing.
Yeah. And so the governor is calling for two existing facilities to become test cases for doing more to help mentally ill inmates. What are your thoughts about how that's going to proceed, how that will play out?
So if it's done the right way, you've got to not only work with the Department of Corrections and the Department of Juvenile Justice. I'm happy to hear they're working with the Department of Children and Families, but also listen to the mental health treatment providers that are in the jails, that are in the community. I was in Tallahassee throughout session and heard hours and hours of testimony of people talking about the intersection of mental illness and the criminal justice system. And I think our legislators are starting to understand it, but there's a lot more education that needs to happen. And so hopefully they listen and listen to recommendations.
What would be some of your top recommendations?
So a top recommendation is actually, unfortunately for Duval County, was a line item in the budget that Governor Scott vetoed. It was one of the several vetoes that he made when the budget was presented to him. It was a mere $97,000 for Duval County to have what is called SOAR processors. And they are people who would work inside the jails that would help people apply for and get Social Security disability income benefits. As they walk out of the door of the jail, they would have these benefits, which include housing assistance, Medicaid, financial assistance, so that gets them back on their feet. It's a preventative measure. And I think finally we're starting to realize the effects of prevention. But that's a huge preventative measure that only $97,000 out of a multi-billion dollar budget was just vetoed. So Rick Scott is saying he's concerned about this, but a direct, huge, huge step that could have been taken, he vetoed.
So you see this audit as reactive rather than you would have preferred to see more proactive measures.
Absolutely. And this one example is just that. It's an example of a pilot that could really then work. We've already started doing the work with Union Correctional, Columbia Correctional. Catherine Burns, who's the director of the Jacksonville Reentry Center, has worked really hard to try to provide some assistance for people who are leaving the prisons and jails. And there's just, we know where they are, we know how long they're going to be there, and we can provide these supportive services while they're there.
Lots of calls on this topic. The number to join us, 549-2937. James in Jacksonville. Hi, James. Go ahead. Hi, James. You're on the air. Okay, James, give us a call back. The number to join the show is 549-2937. Lindy in St. Augustine is on the line. Hello, Lindy. How are you? Okay, looks like we got to reboot the phone system again. Let's try one more call, though, to make sure. Let's try Jay in Tampa. Jay, can you hear me?
Yes, good morning.
Go ahead, Jay.
My concern is that this audit would lead to more prison privatization or more private contracts for services in prisons, it kind of monetizes crime and creates an incentive to not have preventative measures put in place, because then you have people not going to jail and not fueling the prison industrial complex. Is there any possibility this audit could lead in that direction of creating that incentive that would keep us from doing things to keep people out of the prison system?
All right, thanks for that question. Denise Marzullo.
Jay, you're absolutely on track, and that's something that we are very concerned about, is privatizing a lot of services in the jails and prisons. And they've been very concerned about some of the medical care that's been provided in the jails and prisons. I'll disagree just a little bit in that I do think that if we're really treating mental illness the right way, we are trying to prevent people from entering the jail and prison system and get them treatment versus punishment for their illness. If we really look at system transformation, then we're looking at providing the preventative services to people so that they can get on their feet, they can work through their mental illness. Mental illnesses are treatable. They're not curable, but they're treatable. And so if people can kind of get ahead of it with some preventative measures, then hopefully that will reduce the recidivism.
You've been, along with other advocates, working on a major mental health inquiry through our local think tank, JCCI, Jacksonville Community Council, Inc., housed in this building. The results of that should be coming out pretty soon. That will help raise awareness, hopefully.
Absolutely. There's a committee focused specifically on severe and persistent mental illness. There's a committee focused on awareness. There's a committee focused on the intersection of mental illness and the criminal justice system. So we really are working hard, and that's kind of My hope then is that as they're doing this audit, they listen to groups like the experts that have come together from all. You've got representatives from the homeless system, the criminal justice system, the mental health system, kind of coming together. We know what we think could work. And so rather than just kind of do an audit and listen to corrections, we're really hoping that they reach out. And we'll do our part to reach out to them first. We just hope that they're willing to listen.
Let's go now to Yolanda in Springfield. Yolanda, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. I'm glad you guys had the show. For me particularly, this is my background. I was a jail inspector in Miami-Dade County.
Oh.
Retired. I had 25 years in Miami-Dade, so she's correct with the deplorable conditions down there. I'm a national jail auditor also, and I was a state certified jail auditor. And so I just want to say kudos finally to the governor for endorsing this study. And the issue is that the jails have now become these mental facilities, and jails are not equipped, and they never were equipped for that. Neither were the staff, although I've visited jails and I've seen these mental facilities nationwide. You know, some do a better job than others, but it comes money. It takes money, and money takes training and proper staff and maybe some privatization like your guest is speaking about. But I'm really glad to see this, and a lot of the people who work in the jails, the correctional officers and, you know, sheriffs throughout the state and throughout the nation will be glad, because this is an issue that is really long overdue.
All right. That's Yolanda in Springfield. Thanks for that, Yolanda. David in San Marco. Hi, David. Good morning.
Was this for me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to gently disagree with your guest. I'm a psychiatrist in private practice. And the treatment of mentally ill patients in the jail is horrible. My most recent case pleaded guilty on a charge he was not, because he couldn't get his medicine after 3 days and he was hallucinating. The whole system throughout the state is not good. So I'm applauding attention to it and thoughts to improve it. But please don't put Duval County as adequate, let alone good.
That's David, a psychiatrist calling in from San Marco. Thanks, David. Denise.
David, I think you're right. I think there are definitely cases where, unfortunately, because our prison and jail system aren't designed to treat mental illness, you're going to have cases. I've looked at the deplorable conditions in Miami, and immediately after, the very next week, went and did another tour of Duval County. And I guess that's where my perspective comes from. You know, comparing the two is night and day. I mean, there was really, like Yolanda said, deplorable conditions in Miami. Unbelievable. Not just people not getting their medication, but beyond that.
Here, you think it's better, but not right. As he said, he doesn't feel it's adequate.
Absolutely. But again, the jails and prisons aren't designed to treat mental
right.
illness. So they're
Which
trying.
Even the law enforcement officials will tell
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go now to James in Jacksonville. Hi, James. Good morning.
Hello.
Hey, go
How
ahead.
You doing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, what I would like to comment on is that our prison system here in Florida is built for profit and not rehabilitative. And because it's not rehabilitative, it has become an industrial complex in which they're trying to fill the beds of the prisons. And so because of it, they are collapsing the mental ill patients into the system so that they can make profit. And in the meanwhile, medication is not being given. People are being charged with crimes that they cannot stand up against. I have a personal friend of mine that is going through the very same thing. They have had him down there for 3 years, and he is mentally ill, been mentally ill, and got in an altercation. Instead of the system working with the mental ill situation, they are actually trying to hold him in there and find a way to prove that he is competent to stand trial. So this is what got to stop. And until we stop the for-profit for everything, our medical or in our prison, this will not straighten. This commission that Governor Scott is doing is just a smokescreen. It's just a smokescreen. Governor Scott has cut our budget, raised budget. He has did a lot of things, and once he leaves, you'll be able to scrutinize his record. But that is the issue, and we need to correct it. Thank you.
That's James in Jacksonville. Getting into a slightly related topic, the debate over prison privatization, which is something we've done on other days on this program. But what about his comments?
So his comments are real. The competency issue is a big issue. What the Florida State Hospital has now been used for is to restore competency. The problem is that inmates will go there, get competency restored so that they're able to stand trial. They then get sent back to the jails and have to await their trial, at which point a lot of times they decompensate. They get to trial. They are now incompetent to stand trial again. And so it's a revolving door going back and forth and trying to restore competency. The other issue he brought up is funding. And I'm really glad he did. We are not going to be able to make the system changes that we need to without talking about funding. Funding is the bad word in Tallahassee. Everyone wants to hear solutions without talking about funding. And it's just not going to happen. And so I'll believe Rick Scott is genuine when I see the dollar supporting the improvements to mental illness and the treatment. Because, again, we're the second to lowest funded state. We've got
What's
to
What's the lowest?
The lowest funded state right now, I think, is Idaho.
Okay.
and so we're – in Northeast Florida is the second to lowest funded count area in Florida. So – Terrible. We're going to have these problems until we start putting some funding in place to really make a change.
Gail in St. Augustine. Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Yes, I would like to say I concur with most all of the comments that I've heard here. The situation is deplorable in that we have mentally ill patients or people in the jails and prisons with the general population. It really is almost a situation of cruel and unusual punishment for the non-mentally ill patients because they're at great risk for bodily harm by these other inmates that you know may be having a psychotic episode. It's also totally unfair to the correctional staff who are not trained in dealing with mentally ill patients to expect them to be able to react appropriately with mentally ill patients. And I think that the guards and the prison and jail personnel often get held to an impossible standard in light of their training and experience to expect them to be able to manage mentally ill patients in that type of situation. So I totally believe that we need to address the problem. I am very skeptical that Governor Scott has any intention of really addressing it, and I agree, without money really devoted to this problem, it's not going to get corrected.
Well, Gail, thanks. She said she's skeptical about the governor's intentions. Florida lawmakers did not pass a comprehensive package last year to reform the prison system. It's been plagued by inmate deaths that were suspicious, allegation of abuse. The governor issued an executive order in May looking at those issues. This is his second executive order dealing with the prison system. Obviously, some may not be taking his intentions at face value. Denise Marzullo, what are your thoughts? I mean, the governor has issued two executive orders now trying to address these systemic issues in the prison system.
So I think that I'm happy he's paying attention to it. He could be just ignoring it and pretending like it's not there. However, I hope that not only, again, that they do some follow through. They don't just study and figure out what the conditions are, what some best practices are, and then not follow up with funding those best practices. You're right, our lawmakers locally, Representative McBurney, chaired the Judiciary Committee on the House this year, and he did a lot of work. He and his staff, I met with them several times to talk about improvements, and he did present a bill from his committee, and you know, there's people who want to do the right thing. It's going to take time. It's going to take education. But hopefully this isn't just a study that he commissions and an executive order, and then there's no follow through, and he's doing another one next year.
Let's take one more call. It's Catherine in Jacksonville. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning, Melissa. I wanted to just mention the fact that the local faith community, many of whom are represented in the organization ICARE, the Interfaith Coalition for Action, Reconciliation, and Empowerment, has also identified mental health care as a significant concern in our community and has sought out best practices and has is advocating within local community organizations to partner to provide some support in this area. And I just wanted to affirm that at least 40 congregations are working very hard because they feel like the faith community has an important role in speaking on behalf of people who are experiencing mental illness, both in prisons, but also out in the community.
Yeah, thanks for that, Catherine. ICARE is an incredible effort happening community-wide on a number of important issues, including this one. That's excellent to point that out. Denise Marzullo, your final thoughts.
So my final thoughts are is that it's time to take some action. One thing that we're doing proactively is we're hosting the Florida Mental Health Summit here in Jacksonville at the Hyatt Regency downtown, August 25th and 26th, where we're bringing Representative Peters, Representative McBurney, lots of public officials to talk about mental illness and what can be done. We're bringing a lot of breakout sessions, experts in the field of mental health to talk about best practices throughout the state. And at the end of it, we're hoping to kind of have our legislative priorities for mental health established and ready to go. Session starts early this year. It starts in January. So we're hoping to have it ready to go. And it's open to the public. They just go to flmhs.org. For FloridaMentalHealthSummit.org, and you can register. And we're hoping to really kind of, it's a statewide summit. So bring everybody throughout the state together to really present a legislative priority package to our public officials. So hopefully it's a start. We are going to reach out to Governor Scott to see, offer up our expertise and whatever we can do. Hopefully this is not the end step on a long ladder of steps that we need to take. Hopefully this just leads to more.
Thanks for all of this insight. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Denise Marzullo, President and CEO of Mental Health America of Northeast Florida. Well, much more still ahead later. Culpepper on Serena Williams' historic win at Wimbledon. But up next, new options for local patients dealing with acid reflux. And there are a lot of you out there, so keep listening.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Afternoon keynote speaker Dinah Jordan's motivational messages ring loud and true about how we can make the choice to be happy, finding the funny in your life, taking responsibility for your own health, ways to bust stress, and in doing these four things can make a happier, healthier, more productive you. Good for You, Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
Who is your American Graduate Champion? WJCT is looking to recognize and honor a wide range of community leaders and everyday heroes who regularly dedicate their time, talent, and resources to prepare students for success and graduation. American Graduate Champions are role models in their communities whose stories have the potential to inspire others to take action. The nomination deadline is July 15th at 5 p.m. Click the button on WJCT.org to nominate your American Graduate Champion today.
WJCT's new weekend programs are here. Tune in to 89.9 Saturday and Sunday for brand new shows and old favorites at a new time. Join us for True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour, live comedy and music on Wits, and Storytelling with a Beat on Snap Judgment. Learn more and see the new schedule at wjct.org/weekends.
Welcome back. Well, millions of us stressed out Americans suffer from what's known as GERD, or gastrointestinal reflux disease. Acid reflux, as it's known, happens when fluids in the stomach regurgitate up into the esophagus, causing pain and inflammation. Now, though, there's a new procedure for GERD, and St. Vincent's in Jacksonville is one of only three hospitals in the country and the only one in the Southeast performing this procedure. It's called the MUSE system. Dr. Ali Lankanari, gastroenterologist with St. Vincent's, joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. And also with us is patient Jeannie Barzik. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
All right, doctor, let's start with you. I'm very curious about this. I've been treated for this off and on through the years. Never needed surgery. But this is a way to treat GERD by using an incisionless system. How does it work?
Correct. So just a little bit of background. As you know, and as you mentioned, acid reflux is very common. One in five Americans get acid reflux at least once a week. And the traditional means for treatment is medication, and it is very good for people with heartburn. Unfortunately, there are subset of people that either do not respond to medication or do not tolerate the medication or having side effects because of long-standing use of those medications. Originally, the only option that we had was basically surgery to deal with the underlying cause of the problem, which is the malfunction of the valve between the esophagus and the stomach. Now, through MUSE system, we can do the same kind of operation without any incision and fix the broken valve through the endoscope.
And so you go in with an endoscope and perform the procedure?
Correct. So this is a special kind of endoscope that has camera, ultrasound, and also a surgical stapler. So everything has been installed on one. Actually, it is not even a reusable. It's a one-time use scope that we use for each patient.
Wow, a lot less invasive.
Recovery time, less than 24 hours, does not have the usual complications associated with surgery, and very good results.
So let's talk about the results. Patient Jeannie Barzik here. First of all, tell us about what you were dealing with, I guess, before you had the procedure.
Well, before I had the procedure, I had a lot of, I had no acid reflux at all. Mine is called the silent reflux.
Uh-huh.
And I had asthma. And the reflux that I was having, which I couldn't feel, was activating my asthma and making my asthma more serious. So it caused a lot of congestion in my throat and a lot of coughing.
And a lot of people have those symptoms, don't they? And they don't realize that reflux is what's causing it. Isn't that right? And that was your experience.
I had no idea at all.
No idea. How did you finally get diagnosed?
Well, I first started out going to a ear, nose, and throat specialist.
Uh-huh.
And I would have never even thought to go to a gastroenterologist. The ear, nose, and throat specialist told me that I really need to be, he thought that I may have a reflux issue. And I was like really surprised.
Surprised, yeah.
So I was recommended to go to Dr. Lankarani. And then he, in turn, referred me to go to a pulmonologist for my asthma because the reflux was making my asthma very serious.
Let's talk about the connection between these types of symptoms, doctor, because a lot of the time patients might not make that connection. What is the connection?
Exactly. So most common symptom for acid reflux is heartburn. And that is very usually responsive to medication. Now, there are other symptoms, including chronic cough, chest pain, hoarseness of the voice, shortness of breath, and worsening of asthma, and irritation and inflammation of the vocal cords that are less known to be caused by acid reflux. Exactly in this situation, as Gina said, there was no heartburn, so patients think that this is not caused by heartburn, but when we measure the amount of acid, we'll see very high amount of acid in the esophagus.
Wow. So it's good that you did get the right treatment because it could have continued to get worse without this being done.
Absolutely.
What's life for you like now?
Oh, much better. I'm still dealing with asthma issue, but we're working on that. But my asthma is improving very much.
That's excellent. And yes, let's talk about the fact that St. Vincent's is the only hospital in the entire Southeast, doctor, that has this Muse system. So lots of patients might be candidates for this.
Sure. We were the third center in the country that start working with the company. I went through the proper training and brought the technology for our community. Currently, we are enrolling patients, and we are also, after the procedure, continue to follow them and see how they do long term. Now, I have to tell you, because of a good experience, we also will be the first training center in Florida, training other gastroenterologists for this procedure and other advanced endoscopic procedure that usually gastroenterologists do not get trained during their usual training.
Pretty exciting. Well, with so many needing treatment for this condition, this is exciting medical news for our area. Thanks for sharing it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us, Melissa.
Thank you.
Patient Jeannie Barzik and Dr. Ali Lankarani, gastroenterologist with St. Vincent's, the only hospital in the region with the new Muse system offering incisionless treatment for GERD. And we're back in a moment.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4,
uh-huh,
and it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition. Up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen tomorrow.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Ann Browning Masters is author of the new book, Floridanos, Menorcans, Cattle Whip Crackers, Poetry of St. Augustine. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with poet Ann Browning Masters. We'll discuss glass plate negatives taken by tin can tourists in the early 20th century and explore wooden Gothic churches. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Welcome back. Well, she's a high-profile female leader in a male-dominated profession. Charlene Landon is VP of Business Operations at PGA Tour Entertainment here in our area, and she's the next featured speaker at the Women's Wednesday's She Is Fierce series down in St. Augustine. We've got a preview right now as Charlene joins the show with some thoughts on leadership. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
So it's great to have you on the show. I'd heard so much about you over the years, never had the chance to meet you. You hold such an important position with PGA Tour Entertainment, which, as it's been commented upon, it's a pretty male-dominated field. You're riding high up there out of Ponte Vedra. How did you develop your career with the PGA Tour?
Well, it got started 26 years ago. I've been very, very fortunate to work for such an amazing company as the PGA Tour. And I started as a club controller with my background in accounting and finance, and just over the course of 26 years became a staff accountant and a production manager, and then was responsible for finance and administration for PGA Tour Entertainment. And now I hold the position where I'm responsible for the business side of what PGA Tour Entertainment does.
What and that's a big job. There's a lot of business happening.
It is a big job. I know I, every day filled with gratitude that I work with such amazing people, because one of the things I do think, you know, as a part of my speech on Wednesday is going to be about completely understanding that while I work very, very hard and have over the last 26 years, I don't do any of this alone. The team at PGA Tour Entertainment is amazing. On the point of being a female leader, most days that's not even something I think about. I'm a leader there. We have another leader that runs the production side of what we do, Greg Hopfe, and we just have a really, really strong team of both male and female, and it makes my job much easier.
Now, the topic of your talk is titled True Leadership. How do you define that?
I define that as being, and I took a moment to think about that, and I really think it's about understanding, showing respect and caring and concern for employees. I think that when they know that you do that, there's this feeling that there's this team environment that everybody wants to be in the boat rowing with the oars going in the same direction. And I think if you can help people to know that this is what you believe is hard work and that caring and concern, I think that's being a true leader.
PGA Tour Entertainment, you think of golf and television production.
That's right.
Two exciting fields.
It is.
You're involved in the business end of this.
That's right.
Not so much putting together the television programs.
Right.
It kind of gives us a window into how many moving parts there are out at the PGA Tour headquarters.
Very many. As a matter of fact, we have a lot of tour groups that come in, even as young as fifth graders and high school. And in every time a group comes in, I'll try to help them to understand that while you may not be able to play golf, or even be on the production side, there are so many different elements to being involved with working with this organization that's about a professional men's sports league. And that can range from being on the production side to being on the business side. And so all of the moving parts, as you said, are critical to making it all work. But there are very many different fields that you can get in but still be involved with this organization.
What advice do you have for young women and young male executives that are just getting started?
I think my advice would be to, you know, the obvious, to work really hard, to be humble, but also to be assertive in that. Don't ever stop asking for more responsibility. Don't think that what you're doing right now is the end and that you can't go on and try to do more without being asked. I think those are the things that impress me more every single day by some of our young staff when they ask for more and more and more responsibilities. And they're not asking necessarily for more money. They just understand that the more valuable they can become to an organization, the better it's going to be for them in the long run.
She's Charlene Landon, VP of Business Operations at PGA Tour Entertainment, and you'll be speaking Wednesday night at the She is Fierce series in St. Augustine. And tickets to this are free. This is becoming such a hit, Women's Wednesdays in St. Augustine. Pretty exciting.
It is exciting. I've been able to go to one of the other speakers, and I'm honored to be a part of the list. I know you were one of the first speakers. I've seen your speech, and I thought you were amazing, but the whole group of women that are speaking are impressive. They all have something different to say. I think what I have to say hopefully will be valuable to the group too, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, it's going to be great. Get your tickets now to see Charlene speak at sheisfiercehq.com. This talk is Wednesday night at the Treasury, beautiful historic facility in downtown St. Augustine. Again, the tickets are free, so come on out and see her. A pleasure to see you in here with us. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Melissa. My pleasure.
And back with Cole in just a moment.
Relax around the clock with the music of your life. Playing great music from Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald to James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and more. Relax Radio, WJCT, 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
Never know how much I love you.
WJCT invites you to see some of your favorite radio shows and podcasts performed on stage and beamed to your local movie screen. Cast Party, featuring Radiolab, Invisibilia, Reply All, The Truth, and comedian Lauren Lapkus, all performing stories on stage, plus music, dance, original comedy videos, very special guests, and more. Cast Party, one night, Tuesday, July 28th. More info at wjct.org or castparty.org.
Big day at the job. Make it break time. They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap Judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Ta-Nehisi Coates. His new book is addressed to his teenage son about what it's like to be an African-American in the U.S. We'll talk with Coates about growing up in West Baltimore, living in fear of both the police and the streets, and about racism, forgiveness, and how he is raising his son differently from how his father raised him. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Finally, this hour, it's becoming a Grand Slam summer in two sports.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper's here now to recap a wild weekend in sports, beginning, of course, with Wimbledon and Serena Williams. So exciting. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yesterday was Novak Djokovic beating Roger Federer to win the men's final. But the big story is on the women's side, where Serena won the ladies' singles title. She's already run the Australian Open and the French Open and now has only the U.S. Open remaining to win the Grand Slam. Yeah. No tennis player has won all four of the biggest tournaments in a single season since Steffi Graf in 1988, when she won all four plus an Olympic gold medal, known as the Golden Slam that year. Mm-hmm. That was pretty good. And so Serena will be in the spotlight, to be sure, in New York when the U.S. Open rolls around. And Serena, go ahead.
Let me just jump in. Do you agree with the assessments made over the weekend, particularly on social media, that Serena Williams is the greatest American athlete of the last century?
Frankly, I'm not sure you can even call her the greatest American tennis player of the last
really century. Oh, you disagree?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on if you're going to call Martina Navratilova American or not. She, you know, became American from Czechoslovakia.
But the winningest, most high performing athlete in decades.
She's great. I would probably tap the brakes, and I tend to typically. You know, some people want to jump right on what we're seeing now is the greatest ever. I'm more hesitant to put those kind of labels on things. I like to get a little more perspective before you start doing it. There's no doubt she's a great champion and has been a dominant player in her sport. I'd have to think about that one a little bit longer.
You are from the show me state of Missouri.
Well, so yeah, I mean, show me what you got.
That's right.
And it's not only that. I mean, she's performed. There's no doubt about it. There are probably some others who need to be in that conversation as well, not just in tennis, but
other sports as well.
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to ask you about that because there was so much chatter about it over the weekend. I was curious to see where you stood.
And in this day and age of the quick response and the instant analysis, and you know, tweet it out now,
get
on the record,
right?
Somebody, you know, there's such a move to be first, and one of the great lessons of journalism is don't be first, be right.
That's right.
So, but she's certainly in the conversation.
Now, as you were saying, she's not the only one going for the Grand Slam.
In golf, Jordan Spieth is halfway there, having won the Masters and the U.S. Open. Spieth plays this week in the British Open at historic St. Andrews. He's coming in on a hot streak. He won the John Deere Classic on the PGA Tour yesterday. Another of the favorites for the British is Ricky Fowler, who has enjoyed his best year as a pro, including winning the Players' Championship in May. And this weekend, he won the Scottish Open. Now, nobody has won the Grand Slam in golf, at least not in the current incarnation. Winning the Masters, the U.S. Open, the British Open, and the PGA Championship. Once upon a time, Bobby Jones won the U.S. Open, the U.S. Amateur, the British Open, the British Amateur, which were those that time the four biggest tournaments. But nobody's ever won all four of the current modern majors.
How long ago was Jones's
That
streak?
Was in the
20s.
Yeah, so it's been
almost
a long time.
Years,
yes.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, Spieth is a young rising star. He's now you know, number two in the world, will likely be number one very shortly because Rory McIlroy is injured, which also helps his cause to win at the British. And his style of golf, I think, plays well to win at the British. He's not a big bomber. He hits it straight. He has a well-rounded game. The big thing is, how will he think his way around that course? Because links-style golf, as you know, is a much different style of golf than playing, you know, say at TPC Sawgrass.
Sure. Now let's talk about the Armada losing on the road, unfortunately.
Controversial loss at Atlanta Saturday night, trailing 1-0 late in the game. The Armada appeared to score the equalizing goal when Tommy Krzyzanowicz, a former JU star, redirected a shot off his shoulder into the net, but the referee called it a handball. On the replay, it looked like the wrong call, and the Armada lost 1-0. They'll play Wednesday night in Minnesota, then back home to Community First Park to face the spring season champions, the legendary New York Cosmos, on Saturday.
Gotta love their name.
Yeah, and remember, that was the team that Pele once played for.
Oh, right.
This is the legendary, maybe probably the most recognizable soccer name for a team in the United States.
Sure. Now, the Suns also losing to Mobile, but they'll play this afternoon at home. That's something to come out and watch.
Last game of that homestand, 12:05 first pitch, so a lunchtime break there at the baseball grounds, and then they're on the road for a week. We mentioned that Saturday the Armada will be playing at home. So will the Sharks, who are coming off a 72-48 loss to Portland. They're now 7-7. Sharks are in the playoff hunt with four more games left in the regular season. Should be a busy night at the sports complex for sure on Saturday.
And last but not least, rather, the Kingfish Tournament is coming around again.
35th annual Kingfish Tournament.
Oh, man.
You know, the biggest king mackerel will bring in a first prize pack worth over $80,000, including a boat. Once upon a time, this tournament, most you'll remember, would draw 1,000 boats.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They would cap it at 1,000, but a variety of factors, not the least of which being the economy, has trimmed that back. They're expecting somewhere between 200 and 300 boats probably this year to compete in an event that once upon a time was a major cultural event in Jacksonville.
Yes.
Now, it still has some of that, but doesn't quite draw the same number of out-of-town fishermen.
But still, such a great tradition and a big purse for the winner. People don't realize how much money is staked in this thing.
Yeah, it's really more prizes than money usually, and you get a boat and a trailer and some other goodies. I know a number of guys who have, after winning, have either sold their old boat and kept the new one, or done the opposite. They really like their old boat, so they win it. They sell the new boat.
Oh, that's cute.
And it turns into money.
He's Cole Pepper. Always great to see you. Thanks for being here. And follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a program. Our podcasts are now up on iTunes and Stitcher. Next on Diane Rehm, Eurozone leaders reach a unanimous agreement that would pave the way for a third bailout of Greece in 5 years. What's in the deal and prospects for passage in the Greek and European parliaments? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers.